was great. Well, this morning, everything that I have learned from the people that I've met and the books that I've read. And so my story this morning is a lot of that. I was born in Newport, Rhode Island. Newport is a mecca for music and tennis. The Hall of Fame for tennis is in Newport, Rhode Island. And as a kid, I was around that. As 14 years old, my dad got me a job at a place called the Newport Reading Room. And there's the wealthiest people in the world, summer in Newport. And so I was at the reading room, and one of the fellows that was there was a guy named Robert Young. And Robert Young was, at the time that I was there, was putting together a deal to buy the New York Central Railroad. And that was, at that time, the largest railroad in the country. And so he would come into the reading room, and he was a small man of stature. He was a depressed-looking man, but he took a liking to me. And so at the reading room, you played pool and you played bocce. And so I would do the bocce and rack the balls, and Robert took an interest. And so I always enjoyed my relationship with him. Didn't know who in the world he was, really, other than he had a lot of money. So then the following summer, at 15 years old, I found out that most of the guys were making the money over at the Newport Country Club caddying. So I decided I'd become a caddy, so I went over to the Newport Country Club and signed in with there, and the first time they were there, they gave me the bag of a guy named Dan Topping. And Dan Topping owned the New York Yankees. And so when I would go out with Dan, and I put Dan's bag on my back, I would hear all the baseball talk. So I was a baseball fan, but I never did tell him that I was actually a Red Sox fan. So. But being around Dan and those guys and the men as a young man, I was listening to them, I was watching them, I was seeing what a man looked like. I was around men that were men. And so during my high school years also, I ran into and met a girl who I fell, what I would say, madly in love with. And it was madly. And so she was from St. Louis, and she would come there in the summertime, and then she would go back to St. Louis, and I would pine for 9 months. And then she came back the following summer, and then she went back again. And here I was graduating from high school, and I just said, I have got to get to her. There's no doubt about it. I don't know how to get to St. Louis. And then she told me there was an Air Force base there. And so as a result of that, I went down to my recruiter, and he said, no problem. That's not a problem. Anyway, I ended up in remote Alaska. And I wasn't there very long, and I received a Dear John letter, probably 30 days into my stay. And so I had 11 months left to walk in the snow with 100 guys. Remote means, I didn't know what it meant at the time, remote means there's nothing there. That means remote Alaska. I mean, that's nothing. So I was just in, and I went to a place where there was nothing other than 100 men. And so I had to rethink my life at the time. I mean, I celebrated my 18th birthday there, and I was trying to think of what is my life going to look like. And two things I had learned. One was that I really can't allow this to happen again with a woman. I mean, this was really, I cannot do that. And also, another thing is that I'm just going to go out into life when I leave here, and I'm going to be successful, and I'm going to make money, and I'm going to control all my relationships with the money that I make. And so I left Alaska after a year at 18 years old with this on my mind. I got back home, finished my time in the service, and went down to Palm Beach, where Newport and Palm Beach kind of go alongside each other, the people from Newport, the wealthy people there in the summertime, and then in the wintertime they go to Palm Beach. So I decided I'd go to Palm Beach. And while I was there, I got involved with some tennis people, and I actually got a job as a busboy at the place called Bath and Tennis Club, and there was a bunch of tennis players that worked there, and then I got involved with those tennis players, and then playing tennis, someone invited me to take a job in New York as an assistant pro, and my life began into the business of professional tennis, teaching and the Bath and Tennis Club at that time was the wealthiest tennis club in the country. It was the wealthiest, in fact, I think it was the wealthiest club in the country. It was right on the ocean, and then across the street is the place that Donald Trump owns at this time, you know, that Mar-a-Lago, which is, at that time, a lady that was the Merrill Lynch people and the Post Serial people, she owned that then, and then there were movie stars coming through there and the wealthiest in the world, and I just worked with these people. But I realized and I learned very quickly that people are just people. But I learned, I can't tell you the learning that I received in the first part of my life through those folks. The guy that I worked for was a tennis professional who was the most respected in Florida, and he was, I don't know if you remember Chris Everett, who was, I don't know if you people know anything about tennis, but she was became the number one tennis player in the world. And she was there as a little girl at my club, and her dad was my doubles partner at my club. So I was like a setup for victory in my job. In other words, there was no way the day was going to come. So it did come, and it was about 9 years later, and I went to a place called the Cherokee Town and Country Club in Atlanta through relationships that I had received and made there through other people. And so I remember getting ready to go, and I visited with my boss a little bit about it, and he gave me some insights, and I packed my car up, took my wife and two children, who with a very shaky relationship, and we headed out to Atlanta. And we got there, and my job was to build a tennis program that was going to go from 150 people that they had at the moment, 150 families, and they wanted me to build this program. And so I began working at what I felt was the right way, and I began building this program. And it wasn't about 5 years into it, and I realized, you know, I've built something that probably more than I can handle. We had gone, when I finished at the club, and we went from 150 families to 600 playing families. So you can, and that was in about a 10-year period. But during this period of the first 5 years, it got to a place where I was exhausted with my job. I'd gotten to a place where I couldn't handle it anymore, from my view. And so I had two pros that worked for me. I had 144 women on teams, if you can imagine that. Think about that, 144 women. They were all wonderful women, but manipulating them around and all of their issues and problems, I was like a human psychologist that had to work with these people daily. I'd walk into the club and there'd be people hiding behind trees, you know, and I'd walk a little bit and there's, here come another one, you know. And so it was telling me about their problems with their tennis and it was like, it was really, I owned the shop, so I went on a traveling trip. I had two children, two young kids that actually became national players. They went to the national 12s. Jimmy Carter was the governor of Georgia at the time, and he was down the street about a mile and a half, and I had a relationship with him, and plus all these people at the club, so I was teaching Jimmy and the Secret Service people coming up, and the people were interviewing him. I was a cult hero, basically. But let me tell you, being a cult hero is not that much fun. I went to my friend Jack Waters, who had helped me get the job there, and I went to him and I said, "Jack, you know, I've got, I don't know what's the matter with me." I said, "No." He said, "What's the problem?" I said, "Well, a lot of the kids that I'm teaching now, they're going out on the circuit and they're playing tennis and these other pros are getting it, they're taking them from me." And I said, "I've got these, you know, the two kids that are going to the nationals, but they're just stealing my kids left and right." He looked at me, he said, "So do they pay you for your lessons?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "Well, Dave, he said, I don't know what's wrong with you, man. He said, don't you realize you're just an old whore? I said, I'm an old whore. He said, yeah, that's what we are. Pay the money, they get their lesson. That's it. But no more than that. It was shocking. I mean, I got a big ego, you know, and he's telling me. So he's telling me I'm an old whore. I said, and he's one too. So I said, God damn. So that's terrible. I was depressed. I went into depression somewhat after that. And it was things at home. My marriage was, I was so much into this job and building this work that my marriage was a zero on a scale of 1 to 10. So I went home one day, showed up at my house, and my clothes were all out, packed up in boxes on the front porch. I remember walking up to under my porch, and all the boxes were there, and there was a note on it. And one was from my wife, my ex-wife, and one was from my daughter. And my daughter said, Daddy, I'll always be here. And my wife said, don't come home. So I packed my stuff up, and this was also, for me at the time, kind of another big loss, because the losses were starting to pile up. As well as I was doing on one side of the fence, you know, I had bought a boat up on the lake. I had a 32-foot cruiser. I had a home up in the mountains and an A-frame up in Dahlonega, outside of Atlanta. I had invested in properties. I was investing in men at the club. I'd bought 12 units of apartments. And plus this program that I've got, man, I'm a nutcase, to tell you the truth. That's where I was, a nutcase. So I decided at this point, well, the best thing for me is wine, women, and song. You know, I've just got my mind's a little bit crazy, and I'm going a little, my brother, being a music person, I've really always been big into music from my roots. But being a music person, my brother started telling me about the Eagles. And the Eagles started out with one album, and they had songs like Peaceful Easy Feeling. Did anybody ever hear that song? Yeah. Peaceful Easy Feeling. Running down the road trying to loosen my load. I got seven women on my mind. That was me. I had more than seven. some want to hold me, some that want to scold me, some say they're a friend of mine. I mean, I couldn't figure out women for a man on the moon. You know, I had all these women all around me. I had women I was dating. I want to tell you, this life was one mess. So I started moving into somewhat of a depression. And by this time, the Eagles came out with their second album, and it was called Desperado. So someone else has heard Desperado. I'm connected here. So anyway, Desperado was the name of the album, and I began listening to this album, and from the time I was in Florida, I would smoke a little dope. You know, I did a little of that. And my evenings now I would put Desperado, the album on, and I'd get a little weed, and I'd just lay next to my head, this system, you know, and I would just lay there by that system, and I would just listen to this song. And the song started explaining what was going on inside of me. And so, is Sam here? Yeah, I think we're going to play Desperado and let you listen to the words. And this is what I ended up to be. So, it's a good thing it's not the old days. We never would have gotten it up here. So it's really great to have this sound system.
Desperado, why don't you come to your senses? You've been out riding fences for so long now. Oh, you're a hard one, but I know that you got your reasons. These things that are pleasing you can hurt you somehow. Don't you draw the queen of diamonds, boy. She'll beat you if she's able. You know the queen of hearts is always your best bet. Now it seems to me some fine things have been laid upon your table, but you only want the ones that you can't get. Your pain and your hunger, they're driving you home. And freedom, oh freedom, well that's just some people talking. Your prison is walking through this world all alone. Don't you feel?
So this pretty much defined me. I was locked up in a prison, full of loneliness, with thousands of people around me. But inside of me was chains. So about this time, a little girl was on the tennis court giving tennis lessons to, and she said, Mr. Dave? I said, yeah. I said, I've been praying for you. I said, well, thank you. She said, I said, why would you pray for me? She said, I would just pray that you would know Jesus Christ. I said, well, thank you. I said, that's very nice. And I remember the spot. I remember taking the balls up and the spot. You know, I've been there thousands and thousands of times, but I remember that. And so probably within another 30 days from that, a guy named Stan Smith, who at the time was... Is that okay there? Okay. So probably a thousand times, and Stan Smith, who was number one in the world at the time, was playing Rod Laver in the WCT Championships in Atlanta. And Stan happened to win, and they also invited him to my club to speak. And he came to the club, and I was pretty excited because he was really, he was the best. And not only that, his style of tennis fit mine exactly. It's exactly the way, everything that he did was what I liked. And so I'm looking forward to seeing this guy. I go in to sit down, and I sit down, and he started talking about being out at UCLA, and he ran into these people out there that were quite different than anybody else he'd ever seen. He said they would call themselves Christians, and they were followers of Jesus Christ. I said, what the what is this? You know, what's going on here? And he kept talking and talking, and the more he talked, the more he talked a little bit about tennis, then he talked more about Jesus Christ. And I remember getting out of my chair that day, and I walked out the door, and I couldn't walk a straight line. I mean, it was like, I was like, what the heck happened here, you know? 3 years later, 2 to 3 years later, my ex-wife, this divorce situation that was going on, got deeper. And it came to a time when I was going to take custody of my two children. And I didn't know exactly how to handle that, because now I've got not only everything that's going on here, but now I'm going to have the kids to take care of. And we had a lady that lived with us that took care of our children, so we had a live-in girl. But she couldn't cook for beans, you know what I'm saying? I can't have Gloria running the house. I never have anything to eat. And so then I'm thinking about, what am I going to do with the kids? How am I going to put them? I don't know what to do. So I'm dating. I've got all these seven women and all these women. I said, it's time for a woman, you know. So I started looking at my crop. And my wife likes this story. This is a male ego, if you ever heard one, isn't it? So I started looking around at my crop, and I said, you know, I've been dating her some, and I had another one that was close second, but not that close. And so I went up to her one day, and I said, Donna, I said, I think I'm in need of a wife. You know, I was really stuttering around, you know. And so sure enough, long story short, I could tell you a lot of story there. But long story short, we got married. And we tried to take custody of my two children, and I tried to rebuild my wife, my whole life again. And do it over, a do-over. And it didn't work well. So she got a job, and she got a job with a man in Atlanta that called himself a Christian businessman. I never heard of anything like that. A Christian businessman. To me, that was an oxymoron. And I said, what is a Christian businessman? She'd come home. I thought, well, maybe he wore robes to business. This is true. She said, no, he doesn't wear robes. Said he's a Christian man. So I think that's a cult. I said, I don't know, how long are you going to spend at that job? And she said, well, he's a good man, Dave. So she started coming home, and then he took a deal. He started a deal where he would take my kids and pick them up in a bus on Sunday morning and take them to church. And so that was really great, because they were a pain in the butt, to tell you the truth. I mean, they were mostly my fault and my ex-wife's fault, but I mean, they were just really terrible. So we would get some relief. And so we got this relief, and so that they got interested in us, took an interest in us, and then all of a sudden, they would say things like, Jesus is going to come back, and he's going to take all the people that are his with him, and the rest of the people are going to be left on earth. And I tell my kids, I don't know where you get anything like that. I couldn't even figure out where it came from. And they said, what's in the Bible, Dad? And then another day, my daughter came home and said, you killed Jesus. I said, gee. So, anyway, things were not going all that well at this point. But I decided maybe I ought to start looking into this. And so I asked my wife, she had a Bible, and that her grandmother had given her when she graduated from high school. And so I got this Bible, and I started reading it and looking at it. And then she told her boss that there was something going on. Dave's reading the Bible, and I said, maybe I ought to come over and visit with him. So he came over, and he brought this thing called Operation Timothy. We began looking at that. But I just kind of argued him out. And so it got to be probably the end of a year, particular year. And January and February were the worst business months for me in my business. Rain, sleet, snow. Tennis doesn't go all that well. And I had all these investments, and I'm leveraging everything, and it's about the end of February. And I'd read these books, and I argued this guy out of my house, and I was filling these books in, and I'm reading the Bible, and I'm trying to figure out, what is this all about? You know, I don't understand any of this. I'm now about 6 months into reading this. And the boat my boat had sprung a leak, and I had to get up there to take care of the boat. They'd stolen my motorcycles out of my A-frame that I used to run the mountains with on the motorcycles. My brother had not paid the other part, my other side of the investments of the apartments that I owned, and they burned down, and there was no and there was no insurance. I said, "Jack, you didn't pay the insurance?" No, I didn't pay it. I said, "So we got no insurance on the house?" No house, not nothing. So anyway, these things were piling up on me, and I'm sitting here with God trying to figure this out, and all this is going on, and everything's falling to pieces, basically. So I'm sitting there and with God one morning, and I said, "I don't understand this, God." I said, "I don't know what you want me to do." I said, "I've been reading the Bible now and filling out these books, and nothing's changing with me. I don't know. Do I just keep doing the same things I'm doing, or what do I do?" So it was this, got this inkling of some kind of, "You need to invite my son to come into your life." And I said, I said, "Is there a plan B?" And I didn't say it exactly that way, but I said, "Is there another way? I really don't want to do that." And so I began to think how good God had been to me, how he had given me the time. I was very handsome. I mean, I'm a handsome guy. I have a lot of money. I have these kids, and I have a nice wife. I have all these things. I guess these must have come from you. I guess that's the only thing I can figure out. Maybe you gave me all these things, right? Yeah. I said, "Well, that's really good." I said, "I've really done. I'm great. You know, I've got all these things, and you've done good. You've done good things. So if this is what your demand is of me, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do that." So I had read where it said, "If you confess your sins, he's faithful and just to forgive your sins and cleanse you from all unrighteousness." I said, "Well, I'm going to do that." So I just went down on my knees in my den, and I started at 5 years old. I mean, I tell you, some of them, when I started at five, and all the way through my life, and I just went, everything that I could think of, I just said, finally, I said, "That's it." I said, "That's it. I don't know anymore. I don't know. I can't think of anymore. So I guess I'm going to invite Jesus Christ into my life." So I'm on my knees, and this time I'm weeping, and I said, "I would like to invite Jesus Christ into my life." And so he came in to my life, and came in to a place where, as I was there, I stood up, and when I stood up, it was like I couldn't believe it was. It was like someone else had come into my body, like an out-of-body experience had taken place. He'd come into my body. So I said, "What happened to me?" You know, I kept feeling myself, you know, going like this. And, there I was. I mean, I knew nothing. I'm a Zippo. See, other than I've now got the Son of God has come into my life. So I've got the Bible, and Donna's there, and so we started our Christian life this way, and I'm picking up the Bible, and I said, told her what had happened. So I said, "I think what we ought to do is just read the Bible." By the way, the only Christian I knew was this guy, and I kicked him off the bus, you know, quite a while ago. And so I said, "We ought to just read this book and try to do it." He said, "Yeah, sounds good." So we would read the book, and we would, what Jesus said, all of Jesus. She didn't want to do anything that Paul said. She didn't believe him. So he said he was a mean man or something, you know. So we would just take what Jesus said, and we'd start doing it. So for instance, by illustration, it'd say, "Take no thought for tomorrow, for each day has enough trouble of its own." So yeah, let's try to do that. So we do that, and then we kind of figure, talk to each other about it, and that was, we try to do everything that we would read and say. So she'd read something, she'd tell me about it, I'd read something. It's tremendous theology, I'll tell you. If everybody in all of the, probably the what do you call it, these places where you go to learn, people learn the Bible, what do you call that place?
Seminaries.
And so if everybody in the seminary could do that, you'd have tremendous teachers, because they would really know Jesus Christ rather than all the information about him, and the rest of it go on the wayside. So not much belief. So what took place? Well, what I realized is now I could forgive. I had received forgiveness for all my sins, so I could forgive other people. So my relationship to women automatically, at that day, from that day, changed totally. So I had a total rethink on women. Women then became really valuable, because I knew that they had been created by God, and that God had made them the same way he made me. I thought that women were just tools, another tool for my game. And it was not that anymore. That was over. So I started in a whole brand new way. And then I started realizing I need to learn from women, which was another big aha that came for me. They have a whole side of relational side that I didn't even know about. I had no idea who these women were. So that was a big understanding. And I got a peace that I had never known. And I was living with this peace. So the gospel of Jesus Christ, you know, the thing that really attracted to me when I began reading, and I left this out, is that he came for sinners. So the sinner, me being a sinner, when I saw that Jesus Christ died for sinners, well, that was great. That was great, man. I said, I think I'm in, you know, because I was a sinner. I mean, from the get-go, nobody had to tell me I was a sinner. And I said, I thought he came for like Billy Graham and the Pope and some of those people, you know. No, it came for me. So this whole process of finding him and then going from there, and then I look at it, as I look back, and I'll just share one of the verses, a verse with you, that took place, was one of the greatest understandings for me, is John 14:23. And Jesus, Judas came to Jesus one day, and he said to him, he says, Lord, how is it that you'll manifest yourself to us and not to the world? Isn't that a good question? How are you going to separate this? How are you going to know that we're yours and the world is different? How is that going to take place? And he says this. Jesus answered and he said, if anyone loves me, he'll keep my word. And my Father will love him. And we will come to him and make our home with him. So what he's saying is that the difference between the world and the believer, which I now is a believer, the difference is that he will come and live in you and be yours. And he will make, he says, we, the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, will come in to you and live there and make their home there. Wow. The God of the universe wants to come and dwell in here and make his home. That's an awesome thought. So I began realizing that. And as I went along, I said, you know, I'd like that. I think that's great. I would like that. So he did, and they made their home here, and they've been in here now for 43 years. They've been living in here, making a home in here. Now, I haven't been perfect by any means, but when I think about my life, I don't want to disturb the peace here, the home. So if I go off left or right very far, I'm going to really disturb the peace. I don't want it to be a disturber of the peace, because things are good. Things are going working good here. So this is the process. You know, God is a relational God. He's not necessarily, you know, we get locked up in all the doctrines, but he's just a God. When the eagles were ramping out there, you'd better let somebody love you.
before it's too late. You know, I didn't even know who he was when that song came out. I had no idea. And then to see him come and do work this process in me. And I'm going to take off and let you, as the next 3 days from here, and just share with you a little bit of the things that happened when another man came into my life and my relationship with him. Some of the struggles I had, some of the struggles I've had with the scriptures, some of the things that are taking place. And so we're going to go through some portions that I think will be beneficial and helpful. So I'm looking forward to that. Thank you.